Well, I'll accept being called brother-in-law. You know, a few years ago, we had a service, and it was kind of like a round table in a way. And I don't remember what my part was exactly, but I remember talking about the fact of how we address one another. And I said, you know, right now, there are a lot of little kids around here that call me Uncle Jim. And that's okay, because they're not all my relatives, but that's okay. I love them, each one. He says, but I don't know what I'm going to do when the day comes when they call me Grandpa Jim. Well, that day is here. And each one of these little guys is dear to my heart. Because a lot of times the little songs that they sing carry a tremendous message with them. You know, this morning they sang that song, Little Heart of Mine, or Let It Shine, rather. And that is the purpose that we as Christians have in our lives. And so I've titled the sermon, and sometimes we're supposed to do that, but oftentimes I forget. And so I wrote at the top of my page here, oh, be careful. Well, why would we be careful? Because everything that we do stems from what we think. And then what we think can either be the result of what we do with our hands or with our feet, with our mouth, even what we see. And so I'm going to start with the factor of thought, and we'll begin there because the scriptures deal with every little aspect of our lives. And I'm going to turn to Psalms for 119th chapter. And we, unfortunately, or maybe it is fortunately, we'll come back to that chapter again a time or two perhaps this morning. But I'm going to read a couple of verses this morning to begin with. It's 59 and 60. It says, I thought on my ways and turned my feet into the testimonies. I made haste and delayed not to keep the commandments. Those commandments were the ones that our Heavenly Father gave us. And He gave us just a few. Just a few to keep us on that narrow path. And those few little commandments that He gave us will direct what we do with our hands. It'll direct what we do with our feet. It'll give us forethought of what we say with our mouth. And it'll give us a reason to think about what we allow ourselves to see. You know, little ones, when they first are born, what is the first thing that they see? They see their hands. And, of course, you know, next thing they're drawn to their mouth because they're always hungry. But the first thing they do is they grab little toys with their hands. They're not able to walk yet. And then there comes that day when they finally get their feet underneath them, and then, of course, the rest of the story is before you. You know, you can't get them stopped. They're constantly running. Since we're in the book of Psalms, let's go back to the 9th chapter. The 16th verse says this, the 9th chapter of Psalms, verse 16, the Lord is known by the judgment which He executed. The wicked is snared in the works of his own hands. And that is the thing that we have to be so careful about. You know, what we do with our hands can land us in jail. There are other aspects to our hands, what we do with them. And Proverbs, in the 10th chapter, there's some instruction there that's more positive. And so I would like to turn to that as well. And it's in the 4th verse. The 10th chapter in the 4th verse says, "He becometh poor that dealeth with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich." And we can look at that from two aspects, I suppose. We can say the man who works hard, he's going to earn a living. He's going to survive. Or we could look at it from another standpoint and say the things that he decides that he's going to do with his hands is going to be pleasing to the Lord, and he's going to bless him because of it. You know, invariably when we go to the store to buy something, we take money out of our pocket, right, and we hand it to him. It's done with our hand. Guess what Malachi did? He gave us some instructions that oftentimes we tend to forget. But I'm going to read them again this morning, and it's from a little more serious standpoint, perhaps. But at the same time, I can give you examples that it is true. Malachi, the 3rd chapter, and I'm going to read verses 10 and 11. He says, "Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts." A lot of people say, that's a good thing to do, but, you know, do I really have to? No, you don't. But at the same time, did you see all the blessings that he promised there when you do pay your tithe? And I'm going to leave it up to you to decide what a tithe is. He said he was going to prosper you. He said he was going to rebuke the devourer. He said that he's going to, of course, this is couched in the framework of a farmer's way of thinking things. You know, your garden is going to produce well. Your fields will not be destroyed by storms and weather and so forth. I remember a few years ago, and Brother Dan has always given me permission to use this example, and I told you a moment ago, I'm going to try to use examples with each one of these. And I remember him saying to me, he said, it's just customary business that you just, whatever comes in cash, it goes in your pocket. Whenever it comes in as a check that you have to put in the bank, that you record. And I didn't rebuke him for that. It was before he was a member of the church. It was before he really had come to understand God's word. And then I remember that day that he said to me, he says, I probably ought to really be accounting for everything. I said, yeah, that's probably a good idea. You'll know exactly where you're at then. I didn't throw him to the Bible and give him these verses. If you want to know the truth, I didn't even know this existed then. I was so stinking stupid. Months went by, and one day he says, we're doing better than I thought. I'm going to keep better track next year and make sure I pay my dues. That's what made it possible for him to move from up on Gregory out into I'll call it the Lee Summit area. It's still in Kansas City, unfortunately, but he got to move to a place that was a whole lot more pleasant. And his business has continued from that day on. And I can look at it from my own personal standpoint. I remember the times in the past when I wasn't quite as diligent as I should have been. And every year, the grapes fell off of our grapevines before I got a chance to pick them. And I couldn't understand why. It doesn't happen anymore. I wonder why. You know, I'm greatly humbled by what's happened this year. And I don't feel like I have changed anything particularly. Haying season was delayed and delayed and delayed. You know, we should have been cutting hay back in May. Well, there was nothing but rain all the way through until July. And one of the concerns is that, you know, as time goes by, your hay harvest loses its food value. And I can't tell you what the food value is of mine because I don't have it tested, but I finally got to move into that field and cut that hay and put it up. And in the past, I could figure 11 or 12 bales of hay, maybe 13. This year, there's 20. I guess I'll say to you, test God's word. See if he don't keep his promises. Well, you know, our feet are the thing that moves us about. The avenue of getting from one place to another, whether we like to think of it that or not. You know, of course, we always think of jumping in the car and going right, but how do you get there? And it's on your feet. And in the same chapter, Proverbs 4, no, it's not the same one. I'd moved to something else, hadn't I? But we'll go back to chapter 4 for just a moment. Verses 26 and 27. It says, ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Think about where you're going to go. Think about what you're going to do. Here again, I have an example for you, and it's one that I probably will never forget. That is, unless I end up with Alzheimer's or something like that. But I remember the day when my son came to me and he says, some of the boys are going to camp out this Friday night and I'd like to go with them. Is it okay? Well, in a sense, you might say he was of age. I don't quite consider 18 as being of age, but legally, I suppose he was. And I'm thinking to myself, how am I supposed to answer? Which was kind of a silent prayer. And I just didn't have this good feeling. And I said, well, this is going to be one of those decisions you have to make. But I don't think it's a good idea. And I can't tell you why I feel that way. But there's just something in me that says this isn't a good idea. You know, going camping, that sounds great, don't it? Friday night came and there he is in the house. And I'm thinking, I thought he was going to go camping. But I didn't say a word. For some reason, I just left it alone. Time went by long enough for me to totally forget the event. And one day we're working out on the garage, in the garage on something, and I can't remember what we were working on because apparently that wasn't significant. But I heard him chuckle, and I said, there must be something funny, but I haven't fallen onto it. What is it? And he said, oh, remember when that Friday night when I was going to go camping? And it took me a moment. Oh, yeah. I remember. And he says, boy, am I glad I didn't go. I'm thinking, that's strange. I said, well, what took place? He said, well, someone else decided to bring a little beer along. I thought that might be relaxing for everyone. So they had a little bit more than s'mores and hot dogs and Coke. And then someone got the bright idea that they ought to go for a ride and take out a ball bat and thump a few mailboxes. They got caught. Fortunately for those lads, there was a police officer who performed not only his job, but he performed the job of the judge as well. Instead of booking them for a felony, which knocking mailboxes over is a felony, he said, you got your choice. You boys can go purchase new mailboxes as good or better than what they had and replace everyone to the satisfaction of that homeowner. Or you can go to jail. They had a little wisdom all of a sudden. They said, oh, we'll just replace the mailboxes. And apparently they were watched and made sure that it was done properly and according, you know, stenciled and everything. And he was so glad he was not a part of that. Listen to that little small voice within you that tells you when things are not right, that tells you when you can't see the future and yet the future holds something that could be devastating to you and you can prevent it just by listening to that voice and in heeding its instruction. And interestingly enough, he gives that to every last one of us. We all have it if we'll just listen. I told you we'd be using Psalms 119. You can turn back to it again. You may even want to stick a sticker there or something so you don't have to keep returning to it. Psalm 119, verse 105, when I find it. He says, the word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. What a privilege to have that. That's that still small voice that speaks to you. That's understanding the word and recognizing what's ahead and preparing yourself appropriately for that event. There's times when you and I cannot prevent what happens. But if we're living the life that God would have us to live, it doesn't matter anyway. When I say that, I'm thinking of what I heard on the news this morning. You know, there was several individuals, I don't know how many were the total, but apparently there's more than one motorcycle that was involved, and they're driving along the highway last night, and a deer jumps out in front of one of them, and he's not able to respond in a way that would prevent a tragedy. And that motorcycle hit the deer, and two people on that motorcycle this morning or someplace other than here upon earth. Hopefully in heaven, I don't know. The bike behind was able to stop and also was unfortunately the witness to all those things which happened. Like I said, things happen and sometimes we don't understand, but there is a day and time when each one of us are going to stand before our Maker and give account for what we have done. Let's turn to James for a moment. You can only imagine what I'm going to next. James in the third chapter. I know it's in my book someplace. We'll begin with the first verse there. It says, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and also able to bridle the whole body." You have any idea what we're talking about yet? "Behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turned about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which thou, though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whatsoever the governor listeth." You know, we put a rudder behind the boat, and you can turn that boat in a moment's notice. Now the ship, it takes a little bit longer, but they still, the idea is that it doesn't take much to change the direction of a very large object. "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell." Ooh. "For every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison." Ooh. Do you think of your tongue that way, as something full of poison? "Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God." Think about that. Each one of you is made after the similitude of our Heavenly Father. And we bless God, and then we turn around and condemn one another. "Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Neither vine figs? So can no fountain both yield sweet water, salt water, and fresh." Perhaps I've read enough for you to get the idea of what our tongue is all about. It's probably one of the smaller members of our body, and yet it will betray what's going on in our minds every time you turn around. And I'm going to give you an example, two of them. And both of them I'm to blame. I recall many, many years ago at work, there was a young lady that worked there, and then there was a young man that I worked with there also, and I can't remember the gist of the conversation, but there was some jesting that went on. And he said something to her that was a bit, shall I say, demeaning maybe. or at least able to hurt a person, particularly if it was their off day. And guess who the standby was? And all he did was laugh. I was a standby. And I saw the humor from one side of the picture, but I didn't see the hurt from the other side. And it was the most painful part of that whole event. She wasn't mad at him for what he said. She was mad at me because I laughed. So mad that she would not speak to me for 2 whole weeks. And even then it was, hi. You know, I got very little. No communication at all, you might as well say. Shortly thereafter, I left that group. And I had gone to her before. And I said, I am sorry. I said, I should have thought about what that meant to you for me to laugh when he said those things. And I didn't. And I'm sorry that I laughed, because it really did hurt you. She came to me that night, because I was working nights. And she says, I guess I forgive you for that, because you really didn't mean any harm. And it's true, I didn't mean any harm. I can't say we're close friends. But I would see this lady from time to time because, you know, we grew from being young workers to older workers at the company. And one day I ran into her, and actually she was sitting on the curb next to the entrance to one of the buildings, and I'm not sure what her purpose was there. She was in security by that point, and so she may have been checking who was coming and going for all I know. And we were able to sit there and talk for a moment or two and truly enjoy each other's presence. So I know she forgave me, but I never forgot that I laughed. I didn't learn my lesson, though. You see, I appreciate humor, and it gets the best of me sometimes. There was an event here in this room one day when one young lady said to another, and they were, I guess, jawing back and forth about who was most appreciated or what. I'm not real sure. I don't remember. I just remember the comment, well, we all know who Grandma likes the most. And guess who laughed? Instantly, I saw that expression of grief. No, Grandma doesn't like me the best. Be careful. No, our words can even be worse, but that's the two examples I can give you. Just a simple laughter when it shouldn't have been. Well, we can go back to Proverbs 4 for a moment. Verse. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight forward. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. You know, when we walk, we have to see. You know, if you have ever tried to close your eyes and walk someplace, you run into something, don't you? You can never quite fathom exactly where things are at. I know very well, because we keep very little light in our house at night, you know, and I can get up and then think I know how to get back to my bed, and bang, you know, I hit the corner of the bed. We have to see to know where we're going. What you see can affect what you think. And if you allow yourself to look at things that are inappropriate, next thing you know, it becomes okay or acceptable or something that might even be desirable. There are also those times when you see things that you don't really want to see, and yet sometimes God places those things before you and puts that image in your mind that you can never erase. It's always there. So that perhaps it changes you as an individual. And once again, I'm going to give you an example. Most of you know that I spent about 14 months in the land of Thailand, a land that's not nearly so privileged as we here in the United States, a land where at the time the average income per year was equivalent in U.S. dollars was $150. And you think, today's time, you know, I can't even buy the week's groceries for $150. At that time, you might be able to buy a decent amount of groceries for $25 or $30. Our average income was somewhere between $4,000 and $5,000 then. So you can see the disparity. We had all kinds of paved roads, some of them four lanes at that point in time. The only place I saw anything that was more than one lane was in Bangkok, where they had a few short runs of four lane, and typically they would make on each side, instead of it being two lanes, it was three and sometimes four lanes. They believed in keeping your cars close together. So much so that you could literally reach out and touch the vehicle next to you. Well, there was this place in town that was close to the market that we often would, you know, you'd go downtown when you didn't have anything else to do and walk around or sometimes have a meal downtown instead of eating in that wonderful grub that the Army provides. Tongue in cheek there. And I would see individuals on the street corners and stuff selling their wares, selling different items of food, different things like that. And there was this one lady who was always selling what looked like little meatballs, and she would put them in a bag and there'd be some, you could have different kinds of sauce with it. And they were good. Of course, we were never supposed to eat those things, but we did it anyway. The joke was that perhaps it was dog meat. But anyway, I saw her as a very energetic individual and trying to sell what she had to produce. And one night on my way back to base, as I walked down the street to where we would catch the bus, town had kind of closed down, and she had turned off her little, it was a pot that had boiling oil in it that she cooked everything in. And she had four children with her. And they were laying. Laying on the concrete sidewalk. That was their home. You know, even our homeless here have more than that. One or two of them was asleep, and one of them was crying, and she was nursing the fourth one. And I'm thinking, my goodness, how is she going to survive? and yet I had nowhere to help her. As I said, there's times when there's things that you've got to see, that you've got to understand what this world's all about, that can help you have compassion. Well, I want to jolt you just a little bit, because you're going to turn to chapter 6 in Proverbs. And if my eyelids will permit me, we're going to read verses 17 to 23. Pardon me, 16. It's a guide to help you to know what to steer away from. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily a guide that tells you where to go, but you have the rest of the books to help you with that. You know, there is a place in Alma where He gives you that example, and it's in chapter 16 and about verse 150 or so, where he says, gives you an example of the seed and planting it in your heart and allowing it to grow and finding out what kind of fruit it produces. And if it's good fruit, you're going to know it. You're going to feel it inside. If it's evil fruit, you're going to know it too, because you'll walk away from that event thinking, I don't ever want to go here again. Some of those things that say, I don't ever want to go here again, are in this list. The one who wrote Proverbs said this: these six things doth the Lord hate. And so he apparently had some knowledge of what God wants out of each one of us and what he dislikes the most. Yea, seven are an abomination to him: a proud look, you know, that laugh that shouldn't have been, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. Find a way to be a source of encouragement to anyone around you. I don't care if they're someone you dislike even. You know, I remember kind of an example. I hadn't even written it down here, but I remember a time when there was an individual at work that had me so angry that I could not sleep. A whole series of events that happened that, as a result of my anger, I was so mad I wanted to get rid of him. And I had to change that. And I did. And then I had to be a friend to this guy. You know, I look back now and I laugh at myself. And that's okay to laugh at yourself when you make a mistake. You know, it's a way of recognizing that there's been a change and that I don't want to go there again. But there was a school that we taught as I was about to retire, and I was one of those teachers, and there was four other people that were teaching various segments of the job, and I had a certain part of it, and all four of these other people would come up saying, "Oh man, he makes teaching that class impossible. I can't get anything across to the rest of them because of him." And I remember praying and saying, "God, help me. Because if there's anyone he dislikes more than all those, it's me." And the Lord helped me. I'll never say we're best friends. I haven't spoken to him in years, and yet I do not have any animosity towards him. But this last day, my boss came to me and he said, "I want you to teach a class on this. It's extra, but we need this. Can you do it?" I said, "Yes." And then I'm turning to the Lord and, "Oh dear, what did I just say yes to? How am I going to prepare this and I got 2 hours to do it?" Instantly, he gave me the information, where I needed to go, what I needed to do, how to prepare it. But then I had to put it all together and make packages for everybody, you know, and it's a pretty thick packet. And he came up about 15 minutes before it was time. He says, "Are you ready yet? Was you able to do it?" I said, "Yeah, I'm just putting the last few pages together right now." "How did you get it done?" "Well, good Lord, help me." And he looked at me and said he would have had to. I took that information to that class. And that man had that area. And when we got through with it, he says, "I'm keeping this. This is going to be a job I'm going to issue." Which was something that I didn't expect at all. He was never a problem in my class, and I had him for two or three different sessions. Why? God intervened. It wasn't me. He intervened. Why? Because I did what he asked me to. And that was to forgive. I guess that's another aspect to all these things that I've mentioned. Watching your hands, watching what your feet take you to, listening before you speak, you know, listen to your mind. Is that something I want to say or not? What do I see? And then forgive. I think our little ones have got a special force again.
Thank you, Jim. I thank you.